to pick up where we left off a couple of weeks ago in terms of some of the general principles to guide us throughout all of Hilchos Brachos. So we've been talking a lot about what Brachos are deraisa, what Brachos are derabanan. We came pretty much to the conclusion that Brachos HaMazon is for sure a bracha min haTorah. Brachos haTorah, according to many, is a bracha min haTorah. Brachos haMitzvahs most probably are only midderabanan. Brachos haNenin, brachas we recite before we eat food, are probably only midderabanan. So even assuming now that we're dealing with a principle that's midderabanan of a bracha and mitzvahs, nevertheless, still it's a mitzvah midderabanan. The halacha clearly dictates that before one performs a mitzvah, one is supposed to recite a bracha. So that statement I just made really is a halachic statement in of itself, that a bracha is specifically supposed to precede the performance of a mitzvah, not to follow the performance of the mitzvah. And it's really the tonight's sugya of kol mitzvahs mevarchalim over lasiyosam. The fact that we dafka recite a bracha dafka before we perform the mitzvah rather than afterwards. So we take a look at the first of the Maimakomos, the Gemara Maseches Pesachim of Zayin Rebeis. The Gemara comments to Kuliyama Mia Meikar Bidin Lebruche. Everybody agrees that one is supposed to recite a bracha before one does the mitzvah. The context of this particular statement of the Gemara was actually referring to a statement in earlier on in Maseches Pesachim about the bracha that said before Bedikas Chametz. The Gemara's a whole shaila. What exactly is the Nuscha bracha before Bedikas Chametz? Is the bracha Al Bia Chametz? That's the bracha that we're familiar with. Or is perhaps the bracha Livayer Chametz or the Lamed? The issue is a grammatical issue, it's a dictic issue. Everybody agrees that the bracha is supposed to be for the future tense. The question is whether Al has that connotation of future or not. So the Gemara says, putting aside the dictic, everyone agrees to the basic principle that the bracha does precede the mitzvah. And the question is, where does that come from? In Nolan, how do we know this? So the Gemara says, the Amar Rav Yehuda Mashmuel, kol ha-mitzvahs mevarach lein ovel asiyah. So that's a given, that mitzvahs are always, the brachas are always recited before him. And the phrase the Gemara uses is ovel asiyah. So the Gemara just picks up, just technically, what does the word over mean? My mashma thy ovel ishadak dubehu. How do you know that that's what Shmuel was referring to with the word over? Over is not the usual word that we'd use. We'd usually use the word lefnei or kodem. So how do we know that the word over has that meaning? So I'm Rav Nachman Yitzchak Tiamakru v'yotz achimatz derechakikar v'yavras hakushi. So it describes achimatz who was running and he went in front of the kushi, went in front of the other person who was racing against. So you see that over has the connotation of before. Abayar mehochav who avar lefneim Yaakov. Also the Torah uses the word over, meaning in front. Again, another pasuk from Tanakh that has the same connotation. So the bottom line is everybody agrees the word over means before. Everyone agrees that the halacha is you have to recite the bracha beforehand. But now the Gemara raises the question, are there any exceptions to this rule? So Rav Amrei, chutz min hatvila v'shofar. So in the Yeshiva and Rav, they said that one has to recite a bracha before the mitzvah with two exceptions. One is the mitzvah of tvila b'mikvah, and the other is blowing shofar. The Gemara questions why that should be so, and in the end we're going to actually question the din altogether. But the Gemara says, Bishlam of Tevila. So I understand why you have to recite the bracha of Tevila afterwards. Diakarte gavra lo chazi. Because the person cannot recite the bracha before toveling the mikvah, because they're not fit to recite a bracha at that point. Which of course raises a red flag. Why they're not fit to recite a bracha? Who is this phantom person going to the mikvah? So there are a lot of different possibilities. Either this person is a woman who's going to the mikvah for Tevilas Nida, which would lead us to question, why can't she recite the bracha before? Maybe the Gemara is talking about a person who was tameh, a man who was tameh, who was for some reason going to the mikvah. Once again, why can't he recite the bracha before? Maybe the Gemara is talking about a ger who's going to the mikvah, which would make a lot of sense, why he or she could not recite the bracha before, because they're not Jewish yet until they come out of the mikvah. So we're going to see, hopefully, as the sugya develops, which of those three, if any of them, all of them, we're actually referring to. But at least Tevila we can begin to understand because of the principle of Gavra lo Chazi. El Shofar my time. What is the problem with Shofar? Why in the world can you not recite the Bracha of Shofar before blowing the Shofar? So V'chi Teima, maybe you're going to say, Mishum Duma Mekalkla Tkia. Because Shofar is a tricky kind of a mitzvah. You may not succeed in doing the mitzvah. Most mitzvahs, if I'm holding the tefillin in my hand, that would be a real klutz not to be able to be on to the mitzvah. I'm holding the bias. I'm about to tie it on. I can say the bracha, you know, pretty much assuming I'm going to get through the mitzvah. I'm about to do other mitzvahs, so it's pretty simple. Shofar, you never know. We've all had that experience of being in shul with about the kesser. It's just can't stack of blowing. This is not happening. So maybe Chazal instituted that the bracha to kiyah shofar should be recited afterwards because it's just not practical. You can't be certain to do it before. So Gemara says, Ehochi, that's the case. That any mitzvah takes a little bit of skill, a little bit of expertise. So we're going to be concerned with reciting the bracha before. Ehochi, I feel the shechita bilanami. How can we sanction reciting a bracha in the shechita? The Shechem may mess up. The Moel may not do a good job. So how can you make a bracha before him? So the Gemara says, you're right. Elam Rav Chizda, chutz bin atvila bovad itmar, that we have the incorrect gears. But when we thought originally that there were two exceptions to the rule, we thought tvila and shofar. So upon further discussion, the Gemara realizes that shofar is not a good example. And that's in fact that we followed the halacha. Because our practice is, like the Maskara say Gemara, that we do in fact recite the bracha before we blow the shofar. So the only one of the mitzvahs that stands out, that is performed, the bracha is recited afterwards, is tevila, and then finally the Gemara says, "Tani Namiach." We have a brisa to support this. So even though there's a little bit of unclear what the Amoraim was saying, but the Gemara says the final conclusion is that Tovel be Allah that Liyasa Amir Brach Shekhar Shem Tzvara Allah Tevila. Person is Tovel first. Again, we're not sure we're talking about a ger, a woman, a man. We don't know who we're talking about, but somebody is Tovel be Allah, and then and only then he recites the Brach Allah Tevila because of the reason of Gavil Ochaz, he wasn't fit to recite the bracha before him. So when all the dust settles in the sugya, two things clearly come out. One is that there's a general rule called Ovelas Yasan, and number two, there is potential for an exception to the rule, but it's very, very limited in terms of exception. So comes the Hagos Ashri, the second of the Marmakamos. There's a notes at the back of the Rosh, and quotes from the Orza Ruach, one of the Gedali Harishonim. So comes Agos Asher and says, "V'ashoychei tzorach levarach kodem ha-shechita." A person who shechts has to recite the bracha before the shechita. Ki Rabbi Yochanan, "V'lo chashina shevetes nabel ha-shechita." And we do not have to be concerned that he's going to make the shechita in the veil. The veil means an animal that wasn't shechted properly. So there's nothing to be concerned with. That was the conclusion of the Gemara. Miu, this is where Agos Asher takes over. Miu, nevertheless, im lo birach kodem ha-shechita. What if the person didn't recite the bracha before? Whatever, he forgot the din, he forgot to make the bracha. All of a sudden, he shechts an animal, and he realizes a minute later, gavalt, I forgot to recite a bracha. So what do you do now? So says the Hagos Ashri, im lo birech chayde mashchita, yoch lebrech achar ha-shchita. So you'll make the bracha after the shchita. What's so terrible? V'yayitze yedei chayvasa. And b'diyavet, that'll be acceptable. Shekol mitzvah shelo birech over la-siyasan, v'vorech achar ha-siyasan g'depirish b'brachas. That even though the chetchil you're supposed to recite the bracha beforehand, b'diavad if you recite the bracha afterwards, that would also be okay. And it quotes Be'er Zeruah. This is based on the Rishon De'er Zeruah. How did Be'er Zeruah know this? Who told Be'er Zeruah that b'diavad you can recite a bracha after the mitzvah? So maybe he got it from the Gemara that we just read. Because after all, the Gemara is giving us an exception to the rule. The Gemara did open up the possibility of and the conclusion that tevila is an exception to the rule. The Gemara was pilpuling that maybe shofar was an exception, maybe shechita, maybe meal. The Gemara had on the radar screen that there may be just logistical considerations that will force us to recite the bracha afterwards, and la halacha there really are, i.e. tevila, really truly is recited, the bracha is recited afterwards. So ask the husband.
So the shechita came out really trade.
If you came trade, then you should make the bracha, right.
Wait, he did the bracha before.
Oh, okay, oh, very good.
Says the bracha about
Torah. Oh, okay, very good. Excellent. So we're going to see, as we go on, we're going to see, is there anything that was wrong where you tried your best? You did your best and hope for the best. So the Chor Radio Zeruah is bringing a raya from the fact that under certain extenuating circumstances, we do permit brachas after the mitzvah. If the din of Obelas Yasa would be an absolute chok v'layav, written in stone, that a bracha must precede the mitzvah, there's no such concept of a bracha post the mitzvah, then I would have told you, so don't make a bracha when you go to the mikvah. Don't make a bracha when you blow shofar. How could the Gemara say that? Well, you can't make the bracha before, so you make the bracha afterwards. That sounds more like a lechatchil b'diyevet type of a scenario. Lechatchila, we'd like you to make the bracha before. If it's a shasar chach and you can, so then b'diyevet will let you do it afterwards. If a bracha after a mitzvah is not binding, it's meaningless, it's a bracha vatel, it's worthless, so how can you even do it, even in extenuating circumstances, it should not be acceptable. So the Chorodi as a rule was bringing a proof. You see that Chazal weren't so machmir, this din of reciting brachas beforehand, it's not the end of the world. The Chachiva, it's not so terrible. It's interesting that the Rishonim are working very, very hard to make sure we get this bracha and shechita in. We're willing to almost flip the order a little bit and let you make the bracha afterwards. You don't want to have a shechita without a bracha. What's so terrible if you shecht an animal without a bracha? So the truth is, probably nothing. The shechita is kosher anyway. Let's say a person shechted an animal and didn't recite a bracha neither before nor afterwards. So there's no reason to disqualify the shechita. It's no different than any other mitzvah. Let's say I blew shofar, I forgot to make a bracha. So I'm still yotzei. I ate matzah, I forgot to make a bracha. I realize an hour later, I realize tomorrow, I didn't make a bracha. Big deal. The bracha is not ma'akev anyway. The whole bracha is on the rabbanon. The recitation or lack of the bracha is not going to impact on the kashrus of the mitzvah. That's the pashrus in the halacha. So again, we're trying to get the bracha in. We want to be yotzei the mitzvah of a bracha, but it's not the end of the world. So there is one statement, it's hard to call it a Rishon, but there's a statement in a Sefer that has its roots back from the days of the Rishonim that says otherwise. It's a very, very mysterious Sefer that emerged in the Middle Ages. It was called Hilchas Aleph Yud. Now, for some time, people thought that Hilchas Aleph Yud were Rosh HaTavos for Eretz Yisrael. So they're scratching their head trying to figure out where this comes from Eretz Yisrael. So there's nothing to do with Eretz Yisrael. Aleph Yud was a mistake. It doesn't mean Eretz Yisrael. Aleph Yud stood for Amar Yehoshua. Hilchas Amar Yehoshua. Who was Amar Yehoshua? So there was an interesting character who was walking around the Middle Ages. His name was Eldad Hadani. Eldad Hadani, but he believed it, or was telling people that he believed it, he was a descendant of the Aseres HaShvatim. He claimed that he was from the Aseres HaShvatim, and he claimed that he had access to some kind of a manuscript that goes all the way back to the days, back to Yeshua ben Nun. So the Sefer starts with, Am Yeshua Am Moshe Piagvura. The only problem was that it didn't go back to Yeshua ben Nun. It didn't go anywhere near Yeshua ben Nun. He has a lot of very strange things in his Sefer that in a million years Yeshua ben Nun never would have written. Even if we would have written writing smart, we wouldn't have written such strange things. So one of the strange things that he has in this Sefer, Aleph Yud, the Rishonim quote it, and they're not really sure what to do with it. So the Rishonim quote from this Amar Yehoshua Sefer of Eldad Hadani that says that if you shecht an animal, you don't make a bracha, the shechita is no good. The shechita is nevela, it's also to eat the animal. So the Rishonim say, it's a late Sunday, how can you say such a thing? The whole bracha was instituted by the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, 1,000 years after Yeshua ben Nun. So the whole brachas, the Gemara says brachas are only mitzvah rabbanon, brachas and mitzvahs, they were instituted by the Chachamim. How in the world could Yeshua ben Nun telling you a story that if you shech without a bracha, it's no good? So he had a very creative imagination, Eldad Hadani. I'm not sure where in the world he got this from, but it's not really, it's not normative halacha. So the Ned Yehuda has an interesting tshuva, where he quotes a certain statement from Eldad Hadani. And he says that, you know, it's very strange. I'm trying to explain, to give some kind of a halachic background to it, even though he writes, we all know in the heart of hearts that it wasn't really authentic. It's not really part of a Masorah. It was just some very, very strange source that was floating around. It wasn't because it wasn't kvira. It's just strange. So then if you're writes that we don't really have to spend too much time trying to defend the things that are there. They're not really normative halach. They're not really part of our tradition at all. But I'll call upon him, the Rishonim tried hard to get the bracha in, not because we're choshesh v'eldad hadani, but because the correct thing to do is to recite bracha. So the Hagas Osher and the Azarua take the approach that if you messed up, either by Shechit or for any other mitzvah for that matter, so but the Avid, you could still recite the bracha afterwards. So the Rambam clearly doesn't say this. In the context of Vichos Brachas, in the third of the Rambam Koimus, the Rambam in Perek Yid Aleph, L'chavah Vichos Brachas writes, Avalim Shachet Peloi Bracha, if a person shechted an animal by mistake and didn't recite the bracha, you cannot recite the bracha afterwards. What if you did a mitzvah kisi adam and you covered the blood when you shecht a wild animal, you shecht a bird? There's a mitzvah in the Torah to cover the blood, so you're supposed to recite the bracha before you cover the blood. If b'diavad you goofed and you covered the blood, it's over, finished. You can't recite the bracha. Oh, hifresh truma ma'isris, or if a person. Is mafresh shumas advisors or shetova v'lo birech in a chozim of rachach rasiya v'chein kol chayotze b'zeh. Or if a person's tovel, we'll see in a minute what the Rambam means by this. If a person is tovel and didn't make a bracha, you can't make a bracha afterwards. But we just learned a moment ago that tefillah is the exception, so you have to look at the next Rambam. Halacha zayin. Ein lecha mitzvah shemavarach nachasiyasa. There's only one mitzvah under the sun that you make a bracha afterwards. Ela tefillah hager bulvad. So at least the Rambam explained to us what the problem was with tefillah. It's talking specifically about a tefillah of a ger for a very simple reason. She'eino yachaloi mashe kiddushan mitzvah yisitzivanu, she'adayin lo niskadish, v'lo nitztava, ad she'yitbo. Says the Rambam, when a woman goes to the mikvah for tefillah's nida, let her make the bracha beforehand. Why do you have to make the bracha afterwards? When a ger goes to the mikvah to convert, that's a problem. You can't make the bracha before. So nebuch is stuck, you have to recite the bracha afterwards. Lefikach, acha she'yitbo mevarach la tefillah. And why is that? Says the Rambam, there's only one reason why a ger is allowed to make the bracha, or really has to make the bracha afterwards, because it was impossible for him to recite the bracha beforehand. And that's the principle that the Rambam is highlighting here, that the ger was dochi meikora. The goy slash ger was in the position that he could not recite a bracha. It was impossible. It wasn't practical for him to recite the bracha beforehand because he wasn't Jewish. And then, and only then, do we let you get away with making a bracha afterwards. The application of the Rambam is obvious, that under any other circumstances that you could have recited the bracha, you didn't, you forgot, you goofed, you didn't make a mistake. It doesn't matter, says the Rambam. Tachlis, brachas after the mitzvah are completely inappropriate. A bracha before the mitzvah makes sense, a bracha after the mitzvah makes absolutely no sense. There's only one exception to the rule, and that is not even all of tefillahs, only tefillahs ger. So we have a major machlokes here between the Zeruah Degos Asher on the one hand, who are learning or deriving from the fact that sometimes you can make a bracha afterwards. That's a raya, that basically brachas are always good afterwards, but the avodah always acceptable. And the Rambam is saying no, that tefillahs ger is such an exception to the rule because of that consideration of dochi meikara. How do we paskin halacha in this machlokes? So now this becomes important for us. This is not just important in terms of tefillah, in terms of shechita, but all mitzvahs. It's a lemaisa. A person blew the shofar, forgot to make a bracha. A person did other mitzvahs, read the Megillah, forgot to make a bracha. A person lit his chanukah candles, forgot to make the bracha. You did a mitzvah, you finished, and you realize 5 minutes later, yes or no, do you make a bracha? There's a ruin that goes, so say yes, and the Rambam says absolutely not. So in Shulchan Aruch, it's a little bit confusing how we should follow the halacha. So if you take a look in the fourth of the Ramah Mekamos, once again in the Choshchit and Yerodeya and Simon Yutesef Aleph, Hashaychei Tzorach Sheyavarech Kodem, Hashaychei Kedishon Mitzvah Yisvitzvah Al HaShchita. Before Yishach, you have to recite a bracha Al HaShchita. Just parenthetically, it's the Rishonim point out that we're not even sure why you're reciting a bracha in the first place before Shechita. The Gemara says you do, but it's not 100% clear why, because there is a machlekes of Rishonim, is Shechita actually a mitzvah? So the Rambam counts Shechita as one of the Taig mitzvahs, and the Ravid says, Shechita's not a mitzvah. You're not mechuyev to Shech. Don't eat meat. Nobody told you to eat meat. If you want to eat meat, then you have to eat meat in such and such a manner. So that's not really a mitzvah. Let's say, lemashal, if a person salts his meat, you have to kashi your meat. You'd recite a bracha? Don't bracha to recite. The reason why I'm kashering the meat is because the Torah says you're not allowed to eat blood. So to avoid eating blood, I have to do a malicha. That's not called a mitzvah. Let's say a person passes by McDonald's and decides not to go in. So you don't make a bracha, shekin ishtanu, shalom lechol basa b'chalov. Brachas are recited on positive mitzvahs, not on actions that are done to avoid prohibitions. So the Ravid says that shechting is not a mitzvah. There's no positive mitzvah. It's just to avoid the prohibition of eating nevela, of eating non-shechted food. So why are you reciting a bracha in the first place? So l'chora, the Ravid will have to explain that it's not quite the same as not walking to McDonald's. When I don't walk into McDonald's, there's no halachic framework to how not to walk into McDonald's. The Torah couldn't care less whether I choose to cross the street, whether I choose to close my mouth, whether I choose to close my eyes, whether I choose not to walk down the block. Tachlis, as long as you don't eat McDonald's, that's okay. So there's no mice involved. There's no halachic guidelines and parameters how to avoid not eating McDonald's. So you don't make a bracha in that. But over here, I want to eat meat. So the Torah says there's only one way and one way alone that you can enable yourself to eat meat derech heter. You have to go to shechita, and I'm going to give you, the Torah says, we're going to tell you exactly what you have to do. You got to take a knife in, you got to check the knife in, you got to shecht it in this way and that way and the other way. All the halachic shechita that was nimtzu l'Moshe Rabbeinu b'Har Sinai, it has to be done. There's a halachic process, a halachic protocol. It has to be done in such and such a manner. If that's the case, so even though it's not technically a mitzvah, but you can still say Asher Kedishanu b'mitzvah. You can say with a straight face, the Rebbe Shalom was Mekadosh us. The Rebbe Shalom taught us how to do this. It's not just, you know, he left us up to our own to figure it out, how not to be nichshol in the Yisra Nevela. There's a very specific protocol, how not to be nichshol in the Yisra Nevela. Well, let's say the Marshal, we've been talking about making a bracha going to the mikvah. So a woman goes to the mikvah for Tfilas Nida. Is it a mitzvah to go to the mikvah? So one could argue, maybe it's not a mitzvah. Who says it's one of the Tayyag mitzvahs? It's a din. If you want to become Tahora, you have to go to the mikvah. You don't want to become Tahora, so don't go to the mikvah. We're not advocating not going, but we're just saying that it's you have a goal. Your goal is to become Tahora. So maybe you have to go in such and such manner. So does that warrant a bracha or not? So according to this Raven, yes, that would also warrant a bracha. Because even though it's true, it may not be required, and in theory a person could take the attitude, well, I don't want to go to the mikvah, but if and when you want to become Tahor, then there's no other way to do it. You have to follow the steps. You have to follow the rules. You can't become Tahor in any other manner. So you have to go dafka through a mikvah. It's got to be a kosher mikvah with a proper tefillah, without chatzit. So all the rules that were given to Moshe Rabbeinu, what a tefillah b'mikvah means, so that warrants a bracha. So sometimes you can have a bracha that's recited in something that's not a formal mitzvah. It could be almost what we call a matir. It's something that is not really a mitzvah in of itself. It's really there to permit you to do something, to accomplish a certain goal. But since it's halachically mandated how to do it, that also warrants a bracha. But getting back to that story. So the Shulchan Aruch writes, back in the fourth of the Ma'amar Kaimis, that you recite a bracha on Shechita, the end of the first law, v'mshachat v'lo birek shera. If you shechted and didn't make a bracha, b'diavad the Shechita is good, i.e., forget about what it says in Omer Yeshua. B'diavad the Shechita is okay. But now the Ramah adds on as follows. V'mshachat David is yalid bo reyusa v'tzorach b'dika, yishchetenu b'lo bracha. What if I'm about to shecht an animal, and I have a suspicion, I have reason to believe, that there's something fishy about this animal. I think that this animal may be a trefa. A trefa means it has some kind of an internal injury to it. I suspect this animal may have a hole in its lungs. I have reason to believe this animal doesn't look too well. It's coughing away. So something's funny. If something happened to this animal that leads me to believe it has a hole in its head, and a hole in its heart, a hole in its stomach, there's no way for me to notice. Short of, I guess, doing an ultrasound on it. There's no way for me to know this until I shecht it and I open it up. So now what do? So when I shecht it and I open it up, and it turns out that it was a trefa, so then I didn't really do a shechita, or at least the shechita I did didn't really accomplish all that much. I'm not allowed to eat it anyway. So the Ramah is working with the assumption that if I knew for a fact that it was a trefa, and I know for a fact I'm not going to be able to eat it, for some strange reason I still want to shecht it, I can't recite a bracha. It's like a person's practicing to be a shaykhet. So he doesn't want to practice on an animal that's going to be eaten, because in case he goofs, he's going to throw it out. So he finds a good sick animal that anyway the animal is going to be trefa. He knows, we just took an ultrasound, we see it's got a big hole in its heart. So this animal's not going anywhere anyway. So he wants to practice doing shechita on this animal. So he wants to make a bracha ala shechita. So the Ramah says, you can't do that. How can you make a bracha ala shechita if the animal's not going to be mutter b'yachila anyway? So the truth is, there are some Rishonim who say you can make a bracha ala shechita, because the shechita is okay. You fulfill the mitzvah of shechita. It's just you can't eat the animal for other reasons. It's not an avela. So that's what Rashi is quoted by saying, you can make a bracha, but the Ramah's assuming that. The Ramah's assuming that if you're not going to end up eating the animal because of treifas, so somehow that disqualifies the bracha from shechita as well. So now the guy's in a pickle. He wants to shecht this animal. He doesn't know for a fact that it's a treifa, but it may be. He has a suspicion that it's a treifa. So what should he do? Should he make a bracha or not make a bracha? If he makes a bracha, then he's risking a bracha levatala. If he doesn't make a bracha, then he goofed. He make a bracha. If it turns out it was okay, then he lost the bracha. So Ramah comes up with a compromise. The Ramah says, "V'mshachat David yisela b'reyusa v'tzarech b'dika." He wants to shech something with the reyusa. There's some kind of a reason to believe there's a problem, and he's going to have to check internally later. Yishchatena b'loy bracha. The Ramah says, "Shechta without a bracha." Uchsheyim tekosh. When you open it up and you luck out, lo and behold, it's taka no hole. Baruch Hashem, the animal is healthier than we thought it was. Mevarach al hashchita. So he says, "You make a bracha on the shechita then." Assuming that it's soon after the shechita. So the guy shechts the animal on Monday morning, he puts it in the freezer, looks at it 2 days later, and then he says, oh, Baruch Hashem, it's okay. That's ready. There's no tziruf, there's no connection to the shechita. But as long as it's pretty close, there's no real formal hefsek, then it would be okay. So it's not a great surprise where the source for this halacha is from. Take a look in the parentheses. It's based on an arzarua. Now this is not a shocking statement of the arzarua, because let's not forget, the arzarua was the one who, in the previous marmachum, who the Gos Ashri quoted in marmachum two marmachums ago, was the one who said, "Well, b'diavad, you can always make brachas afterwards." So what the arzarua is l'shitasa, the arzarua is saying, I hold that you can always make a bracha afterwards. It's just the chetchila beforehand. So in this unique case, where you can't make the bracha l'chetchila, it's impossible because it's a suffering bracha l'matala, so we're going to let you b'diavad, in effect, l'chetchila, even make the bracha afterwards. So the fact that the arzarua sanctions reciting a bracha after the shechita, the suffering treifa, this is not a great surprise. This is the arzarua following his view. The question is, why did the Ramah quote this arzarua l'halacha? So one of two possibilities. Either the Ramah quoted this arzarua because he taka paskins like the arzarua, And therefore, we can extrapolate to even a case not of a treifa, not of a suffering treifa. What if a person shechts a perfectly healthy animal? He knows it's going to be fine. He didn't make the bracha, so b'diavad he can make the bracha afterwards. The Orza rule wasn't saying anything unique in this Mar Mokom. He was just following in his own footsteps that a bracha b'diavad can be recited afterwards. If that's the case, then the Ramah is taking a stand on all of Hilchos brachas. The Ramah would let you make a bracha after you finished the Megillah, and after you ate the matzah, and after you blew the shofar, any mitzvah you did, as long as you remember within a short amount of time, samach la mitzvah, it would still technically be good b'diavad. No, I think it just means not a significant hefsek. I think that's what it means. It means you didn't start talking, you didn't start shmoozing, you didn't start doing something else. I think that's what it means. But maybe that's not what the Ramah meant altogether, because the Ramah never quotes the first half of the Ozeruah. Nowhere in Or Chaim Yerdeh, never does the Ramah say, but the Evid of Yet Matzah, you can make a brachy afterwards. Never does he say, if you blew shofar and you remember a minute later, you can make a brachy afterwards. Maybe what the Ramah meant is as follows. We really, truly follow the Shittas of Rambam. Our view is really the opinion of the Rambam, that you have to make a bracha beforehand. Under no circumstances can you make a bracha afterwards, unless, like the case of Tefillah, you couldn't make the bracha beforehand. Why couldn't you make the bracha by Tefillah? Because the person was a goy. Here, the second case of the Yerzeruah is similar to that. I couldn't make the bracha. What do you want me to do? You want me to make a bracha on the animal that has a 50% chance has a hole in its heart? I'm not allowed to. You tell me, you rabbi yourself tell me not to make the bracha. It's a suffix bracha. If I would ask the Ramah, should I make a bracha on a suffix treif? He'd say no. So the Ramah is saying that whenever you have any situation that arises that you are dochli, you can't make the bracha. It's impossible for you to make the bracha. Then and only then will we look the other way and let you make the bracha afterwards, because that's the halakha equivalent to the tefillah case. But if the reason why you didn't make the bracha before is because you were lazy, you forgot, you were careless, then we will not let you make the bracha afterwards. So it's unclear from the Ramah, by the Ramah quoting one of the Ozeruahs, not the other one, did the Ramah mean, yeah, he's buying into the whole Ozeruah Shita? Or is the Ramah saying, no, I'm not buying into the Ozeruah. I'm meeting the Ozeruah halfway. I'm willing to say, when it was Dochi Meikara, almost like the Rambam's Lashon was, and the Ramah's treating this almost like Dochi Meikara. But even though it's not 100% clear what the Ramah was saying, the later poskim seemed to side against this Ozeruah, seemed to side that with the very, very few exceptions of the Tefillah, or maybe the Suffolk Treifa, generally speaking, if a mitzvah was done, the bracha wasn't recited, and the bracha should not be recited afterwards. But the one case that for sure was an exception, that was Tefillah. That was explicit in the Gemara. So now there's a machlekes and Rishonim, just how much of Tefillah is really an exception. So in the fifth of the Marmikomos, Tosfos in Pesachim Zayinim Beis, Ala Tefillah, Amr Ben Chana B'Shem HaGoyin, Ben Chana calls one of the Goyinim, Davka B'Tefillah's Ger, the Lachazi Karim Tefillah. Only Tefillah's Ger, because you can't say, the Lo Matzil Meir B'Tzivanu, Dekati Nochrihu, Aval Shar Chayve Tefillah. What about a regular person who's going to the mikvah? So, like the Rambam said, a regular person has to make the bracha before, and you cannot make the bracha afterwards. Keep going. What are some examples? Going Baal Keri V'Chayayitze Bo, Mutalavarech. What if you have a person, a man who became Tameh, Baal Keri, and now he wants to go to the mikvah? So can he make the bracha before, or can he not make the bracha before? So the answer is depends. If you accept what's called Takanas Ezra, or if you reject Takanas Ezra. The Mishnah tells us in Brachas, that in the days of Ezra, there was a Takanah that was made by Ezra and his Beis Din, that once a man becomes Tameh as Baal Keri, he should not make any bracha, shouldn't daven, shouldn't learn until he goes to the mikvah. So the Gemara says in the later days of the Tanoim, they were mevatel that Takanas Ezra, because they realized most people weren't following it anyway. Tosfos writes that whenever you have a Takanah that's called Poshtim of Yisrael, that most of Klai Yisrael weren't following a certain Din Derabanan, so then the Beis Din abolishes it. It's just not binding. If the Tzibur can't do it, they can't do it. A Din Deraisa, the Tzibur gets up and says, we can't keep Shabbos. It's tough. Better figure out how to keep Shabbos. But if there's a Din Derabanan that's made, and the Tzibur just can't act it, then the Gemara says that you have to be mevatel, because Ein goes in Gzer LaTzibur, Elim Kein Rov Tzibur Yichal Mamad Ba. So sometimes you have a Takana Gezeres that was made, and it takes a long time to determine, did it catch on, did it not catch on? It's not so simple. So eventually, over time, the Chazal came to the realization that Takana Ezra just didn't really catch on, and they were Mevatla, and that's why Bizman is there. We don't really follow it. As a Mitzvah Chasidus, to be Rishonim right, it's a nice thing to do. Those who are able to go to the mikveh, would they become Tavar Lechem Bracha? But in terms of being a real requirement, it's not a requirement, Bizman is there. So therefore, Tosfos writes, Bizman is there, when a person wants to go to the mikvah, so they can make a bracha before. What's the big deal? Why can't they make a bracha before? Kedei aminu perech b'shemeso, nog alma ketlosa sabe, ke Rabbi Yehuda b'bal keri, sheyachol espal levarach v'lumot kodem tefillah. The Gemara says that the minhag ha'olam must to follow there were three psachim that were given by three sabim, three older Talmid Chachamim, about three different issues in halacha, that the minhag became to follow those Tanoim. So one of them was the view of Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yehuda ben Beseira, who said that Takanas Ezra is over. So our practice is that we don't follow Takanas Ezra, so you're allowed to make a bracha before. So what's the big deal? The only time you don't make a bracha before is the non-Jews converting. But nevertheless, Tosfos finishes, Ava pichein emiri, de'en ligor b'noshim shevavarchas achar ha'tefila. We shouldn't stop, we shouldn't rebuke the women who recite the bracha when they go to the mikvah after the tefila. Since there is once in a while a bracha in the mikveh that cannot be recited before, namely tefilas ge'er, so Chazal perhaps wanted to have uniformity in Uchas brachas. Every time you go to the mikveh, every person should know, going to the mikveh, mikveh first, tefila first, bracha afterwards. Even though 99% of the tefilas, it doesn't really make any sense. But tefilas nashim, it makes absolutely no sense. Afa bichein is a low plug in Uchas brachas, not to differentiate. So Tosfos doesn't sound like they're a big fan of this minhag. I may read the Ein Ligor B'Nashim. Sounds like don't scream at the women about it. But if you want to know what the truth is Rabbi Chanan and the Gaonim said is true, that the only type of tefillah that really makes no sense, the real tefillah really makes sense to recite the bracha afterwards, is the only tefillah is gerim. So even though the Tosfos gives a very powerful endorsement of this minhag by not screaming at it, but later poskim, the later Chachmei Ashkenaz adopted this minhag, accepted this minhag, and this has become the standard minhag in our communities. That the Ashkenazi women today do not recite a bracha before they go to the mikvah. They dafka recite a bracha right after they come out. The teufel first, and then they come out, and then and only then they recite the bracha. Sfarim do not do that. Sfarim follow the minhag of the Shulchan Aruch, follows the Rambam, the Rechanal, the Gaonim, who take the Gemara literally only for Tfilas Geirim. Tfilas Noshim, they recite a bracha, then they go under the water. But Ashkenazim follow this minhag that the Ri, a long-standing minhag, this minhag that the Ri, didn't want to rebuke, has eventually become the normal standard minhag in Ashkenazi. But even though this is the minhag b'zman hazeh, the Ashkenazi communities, the post can point out that it's not such a glatt minhag, not such a perfect minhag, because probably most of the Rishonim didn't accept it. Probably most of the Rishonim learned the Gemara Kepshuto only by Tefilas Geirim, not by other Tefilas. So how could we somehow keep the minhag and make things a little bit better, have a cake and eat it? Kind of keep the Gemara and keep the minhag all rolled into one. So there was another minhag, a corollary minhag, a second minhag that developed, is that after a woman goes to the mikveh, one time she goes under the water, she comes out, she recites the bracha, then she goes down a second time. What's the goal of going down the second time? To make it at least a little bit of avolas yosan. So even though it's not really avolas yosan, because she already was yotzi with the first tefillah, but it's a little bit of avolas yosan because she's about to do a second tefillah.
Why can't the ger do the same thing?
A ger, we have no problem with. Right, but we have no problem with the ger, because the Gemara said that a ger does it this way. So we have no problems. We don't have to be firmer than the Gemara. But by the Nashim, where according to most of the Rishonim, the whole thing doesn't make any sense. So then this minhag came to, in a certain sense, defend the first minhag. The question is, does it really accomplish anything, this second part of the minhag? So l'chora, according to pure halacha, it doesn't, no pun intended, it doesn't accomplish anything. Because once the woman goes under the water once, she's tahora, finished, it's done. The second tefillah is meaningless. The second tefillah is kemanda leisa. She's per 100% muteras tabayla with one tefillah alone. So what kind of alasiyasin is it? You were yaitzi already. It's like a person saying, I blew the shofar, I'm going to make a bracha and then blow the shofar again. The second blowing is meaningless. So what do you accomplish? So the emes is that we do it anyway, even though it doesn't really accomplish anything. Some achronim have strange chumras that maybe you should tell the woman she should have in mind not to be yaitzi with the first. We don't play these games. We don't go to the mikvah. She should just go to the mikvah normal. Stop the funny kuntzim and everything. She should go to the mikvah the first time, comes up, recites the bracha, and then goes down a second time. Then there's a later minhag, which has nothing to do with this, that the woman goes to the mikvah a third time. She's tovelos a third time. That's a different reason. It's a couple other reasons. That's not a real, real din. The real emes din is one tefillah does the job. The second tefillah is a minhag in order to create a little bit of an avolas yosan. So I hope upon him, everybody agrees the klal is called a mitzvah tevachim avolas yosan. Everybody agrees that's the din for sure lechatchila. According to the Rambam, that's the din even b'diyevit. According to the Zeruah, it was Ashri, b'diyevit, you can always make a bracha afterwards if it's close enough. Everyone agrees that there are some exceptions to the rule. That's the case of Tefillas Ge'er for sure. Whether we can extrapolate to the Shechit of the Suffolk Trefa is questionable. Whether you can extrapolate to other Tefillas is questionable as well. So the basic rule we have, the basic exception to the rule we have a couple of pieces, odds and ends in between. We're not quite sure where to place them into this whole spectrum of things. Hopefully that's from next week. We'll try to continue this sugya of Avolas Yosan and try to see how it plays out in terms of other applications as well. I think actually it won't be next week, because next week I have a Chasana Wednesday night. And I think in 2 weeks I'll be in Eretz Yisrael on Wednesday night. So I think it may be a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for part two to this. But hopefully, Mir Tashem in 3 weeks.
Is that really a mitzvah?
The Gemara calls it
it's a
chalois. It's a chalois.